You know, I mean, I literally feel like I'm holding everything so loosely. Like if he wanted to say, okay, this was all a big joke, unwind it, pick the tiny house back up, send it back to America, whatever. I mean, if God wanted to do whatever, I'd be willing to do it. I'm at that place, honestly, where I wouldn't be surprised anymore about anything. I wouldn't be surprised at this point if Lisa and I, either one of us, you know, just drop dead of a heart attack suddenly and just be like, okay, Lord, I guess all this ends up making sense when we get to heaven. But right now I can't make sense of it all. That's something deep. That's something where you've gotten all of you out of the way and you're just like, okay, Lord, whatever you say, Father, without saying, yeah, Lord, whatever you want to do, just do it. I'm out. That's a totally contemptuous, bad attitude. Do you believe what you are saying? Do you believe that hope? Do you believe that light beyond? Do you believe that? Although today and for a time, the realization of your vision is utterly impossible, that it will still be realized. Do you believe it? And God will be glorified when He answers our prayers, when He finally says, enough is enough. You've passed the test. You've demonstrated real faith that goes far beyond your ability to endure, such that you despaired even of life. This happened that you might not rest on yourself, but on God, me, who raises the dead. Oh my goodness, how incredible. I just reached the end of the trail where I turn around from beating down the webs, and it's 8:48. It is September 20th, 2022. It's Tuesday morning. And I've already attempted to make this recording for several minutes and was just totally distracted by the spider webs and by trying to keep an eye out for my lavalier microphone. I think I may have accidentally dropped it on the trail and I haven't been able to find it. I'm sure if somebody else found it, they would have picked it up. So I'm not sure how that happened, but nonetheless, I wanted to try to capture because I feel something new. I don't believe I've ever felt. I feel totally flat. Lisa said two or three times yesterday, oh, Michael's not his normal self. My husband's not doing well. And she can tell how quiet I was. We did even a FaceTime yesterday. And I just really just ran out of words. And I was just like trying to hit something back to her to stay in the game, if you will. And I am feeling physically flat. I'm feeling emotionally flat. I'm feeling spiritually flat. It's like all the air has been let out. I've been sleeping in a little later. I didn't even get out of bed until like 6:30 this morning. I woke up at 4 something and then turned on Crook in the Lot. Apparently went back to sleep for a little while and been having very bizarre dreams the last two nights. Just really weird, far-fetched, weird stuff. So anyhow, I got up and I've just been feeling very flat. And it's like I don't have any energy for virtually anything. I have not even replied to my friends' texts. I'm thankful for the friends that haven't texted me and wondered what's going on with me. I don't have the energy. I don't want to talk to anybody. I sat outside yesterday with Lisa, talking to her over the phone, and was explaining that how I felt. And she said, honey, I feel exactly the same way. So once again, we find ourselves in the exact same place. So whatever God is doing with her, He's doing with me. We are definitely being kept in harmony and unity with one another, even in the negative stuff. Pretty much I'm out of words. I'm having a difficult time explaining. I was reading in 2 Corinthians the other day, chapter 4, you know, being struck down but not destroyed, persecuted, not abandoned, perplexed but not in despair. And I was looking at that and I said, sweetheart, this is exactly how I feel. I feel exactly that way. I feel that I still have hope. I just have no feelings of the hope. It's the weirdest thing. It's like I'm not in despair as if, oh, I'm never going to see my wife. This is never going to happen. No. And on the contrary, I still believe that this could happen at any moment. It could be revealed that God delivered me, delivered us. But I just don't have any feelings towards that. Lisa and I talked about how our expectations for deliverance is gone. Not deliverance, the actual deliverance, but the timing, like right now, the hope that, oh man, this 9/11 and maybe a few days after and all that, that expectation is now gone. It's been crushed. And I'm thinking a lot of my friend and how he said that when they were led to their house, that God allowed it to be so difficult, although over a much shorter period of time, they got to the point where they just became hopeless and they're like, they just gave up on the house. And then it came back to them. And that's a picture of, you know, Abraham and Isaac. And you put the knife to the kid's throat. And so Lisa and I have been thinking that we've been there. And I read to her the part of the crook in the lot yesterday where he talks about how following the pattern of Jesus Christ, the circumstances almost always have to go down, farther down, farther down. And that we are just as ignorant of the low point as we are of the coming back up, that we don't realize how far down God is going to bring this thing. And I said to her, I said, sweetheart, we are clearly wrong about how far down Father was going to bring this. And she's like, yes, we were. Last night, she read to me a letter I had sent to her back in June, and with a package that I had sent to her, a letter. And then she also, or in the suitcases maybe, I can't remember. And I think it was in the suitcases. And then she talks about how she's listening to us talking about streams in the desert before 9/11 and things that she had rewritten, you know, of streams in the desert so that it applied to her. And she's like, look, here we are a year later. We would have never imagined. We were so wrong about how long. We could not have imagined that God was going to make us wait this long. We thought that, and especially after what he did with P and I, he put us together so quickly, 90 days. So I think I had real wrong expectations. And I've been very thankful that Father's timing has been what it is. I've been very thankful, and I'm even still thankful. I'm thankful that I recognize that there's a part of me way below feelings that recognizes that God is still alive, God is still in control, God is still faithful, God's timing is still perfect, precise, and very wise, and that I will once again justify my Father in Him taking His time to do this. I feel quite certain that I can feel the heat in my heart a little bit when I say that I just know God's timing is perfect, and He's working things into us and preparing the soil much better and preparing the foundation much stronger for this blessing. And the victory will be sweeter, I believe it by faith. And I feel that we're just holding on in the storm right now. We're just holding on in the unknown. Lisa talked about how right below the surface, she can feel the reality that we have no idea the timing of this anymore. And that God may do something that drags it out. And she started saying, well, you know, hopefully He'll do it before 2023. And my first thoughts were, yeah, we were saying that back in 2021. We were saying, oh, surely He'll never let us go to 2022. And now here we are just months from the end of 2022. It's absolutely shocking to look back on how wrong we were about the point of lowliness. So I am hoping a little bit something like Revelation 2:10 is going on right now. Jesus said, don't be afraid of what you're about to suffer. Satan will put some of you in prison for 10 days to test you. Be faithful even to the point of death, and I will give you life. I don't necessarily think Jesus meant literally 10 days in that instance. It might be more of a 10 representing completion. And it's interesting that tomorrow, depending upon how you count it, is 10 days after 9/11. And then it's also 9 divine completion month, 21 number of completion that God seems to favor for having used in our story. So I just don't even know. And it's almost like I have so little energy. I feel myself even staggering on the trail. So I'm having some physical issues as well, just like probably with sinuses, and hence I'm sleeping a little later. But it's it just feels overall like a state of kind of like a depressed state. And yet not in despair, not wanting to feel, oh, God didn't deliver us. You know, we're not worthy. Just give up, move on, take matters into your own hands. No, nothing like that. Just not feeling his presence, not feeling excited about reading his word, not feeling any, you know, music, not feeling any real sense of good, strong hope and excitement and anticipation. It's like that's all gone. And I have read in streams before about God bringing something to the point of hopelessness. And I think that from this experience, when I feel like this, and I have felt like this before, but probably not as complete or as deep, and I probably wasn't as conscious of it as I am now. And I think that against all hope, Abraham in hope. So there's hope existing inside of hopelessness. And I could say that that seems to be, if I'm correct, that's where I'm at right now. There is no hope. All of our hopes were in 9/11. And that was the providence leading us to believe this. I told Lisa again yesterday, I'm 100% certain that God has intentionally allowed us to believe these dates like this that have come and gone with nothing for a reason. It's part of our suffering. It's part of our testing. And just as surely as God led Israel to water 5 times that failed or was bitter, God has led us multiple times to these dates. It's a very mysterious way of God. And I just said, it balances out all of the other prophetic that comes true, and it helps keep God true to his word. We know in part, we prophesy in part, and his judgments are beyond understanding and who can trace his steps, basically. It keeps God, God. It shows we are not God. And it keeps us in bondage, the chasing of these dates and providences. And yet, the failures where I'm not able to trace God out and say, guaranteed it's going to happen on this day, keeps God distinct from me. Shows he is holy. He is perfect. Keeps me dependent on him. Keeps me from becoming prideful. I told Lisa, could you imagine what would happen to our pride if every single time we followed the providence and it was correct? Would we not begin to think very highly of ourselves, even if we didn't want to? Wouldn't the sinful nature begin to exert itself in that way and drift that way? I know that I have that in me. So I think the thing that I'm getting the most energy about is that this has served to keep us humble. It keeps us from ever being able to say, we were perfect. We were prophetically 100%. We obeyed 100%. We can't say that. We have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from ourselves. I think there's a bit of jar of clay that comes through very nicely when I've conjectured about dates and they don't come true. And at the same time, the Lord has been pleased to allow me to have enough to know that I am hearing from him, that he is orchestrating all of this, when I can say, God is doing this because he's going to hit a precise date with these bags. And then he does another 777-day event. He did, you know, and I even guessed he's going to do this in 770. I said, wow, how amazing would it be if, and it turns out he did. The only thing, again, they were released from customs. Oh, man, how in the world did I just come through here and miss that big old spider web, but now it's back that quick. That just doesn't make any sense. Just right across this trail, he tried to repair that big old huge spider web that quick. Man, those guys are quick. So I just walked right into it, got a face full of a big old giant web spread across the trail. Oh man. And he was sitting right in the middle of it. So help me get back my thoughts. Yes, I'm convinced that these are part of God showing the jar of clay. This is part of God's brilliance to show. Why is God doing that? Because he knows that we have the capacity for sin nature in us. He knows how difficult it is for him to bless people and for them to then begin to exalt themselves. And particularly so when you're a full-time servant of the Lord who has been subject to so much public humiliation, evil suspicions, doubts, slander, persecution, mocking, etc. You have a part of you that, because of the pain of that, you're like David wanting to cry out, "Oh God, crush the teeth of my enemies. Bring upon their heads. Bring upon their children." Oh, and David just cries out against his enemies. And you even see, you know, Mary talking about her being exalted. And you talk about Hannah saying that her horn has been exalted above her enemies. So you can see how they were mocking her and ridiculing her all those years. And when she finally got lifted up, she says, "Oh, my horn is exalted above my enemies." And you can see she was really wanting to kind of gloat over them in that way. And I want to be careful not to do that. But my point is that when you have been humbled so much by having to publicly tell your testimony, which just like Jesus is guaranteed to be misunderstood by 50% of the people because God's ways or dealings are very bizarre. I saw Jesus cry out yesterday in the AD series that I was watching again. And you see him say, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And I just felt pause on that. Like, you know, you could understand Jesus saying, "Why have you forsaken me?" It looks like, you know, God cannot and did not deliver him. And then unknown to Jesus, just a few days later. Well, not unknown because he knew. But what I mean is that in the natural part of him that's crying out, "Why have you forsaken me?" He's going to be have an incredible lifting up. Incredible lifting up. And maybe that's the case for us. Maybe God has allowed us to come into this hopelessness. Believe it or not, the fact that I'm still down, ironically, is giving me a little bit of hope. I've often thought that the Lord would have to leave me in a down position before he lifted me up, because I'm so often pretty happy. You know, pretty happy and pretty filled with hope and faith. And I said, well, if the Lord really wants to lift me up good, then he'll have to take me from being down. And right now I feel so down, I wonder, like, if I got a great news, could I feel it? It would take a little while for my brain chemicals to get marching in order again for me to be able to really appreciate it. So Lisa and I are in this place where we're exhausted. We are even fatigued of saying, "I love you" and "I miss you" and saying the same old things to each other. We're probably tired of hearing it so much. We're tired of saying it so much. We're out, and we're out of options. We're out of strength. We're out of creativity. It's just flat. Everything is just flat. And yet we still feel a strong love for each other. I still miss her so much. It's just the saying it is just so repetitively flat, boring, and doesn't give you anything but more suffering usually. And so I'm amazed that I still have faith. I still believe, even though the circumstances all say you've just faced your biggest defeat. It's like I still have this hope that will not go away, that I hope that God has some unrevealed deliverance that he's already delivered me. I still believe that God has done something that will be connected to 9/11. And I don't know how, because 9/11 fell on a Sunday. But I still believe somehow we are going to see something, even if God draws it out, that something happens significant. And I don't know what it would be. I don't know if we're going to find out there was some law enacted in Florida that, you know, women can no longer, you know, keep their children from the men and demand payment over it. And if that's ever happened, they have to return all the monies. I mean, who knows what God can do? Who knows what we may find out happened on 9/11? I just think it's amazing, too, that it was the 21st anniversary of, you know, the 9/11-2001. Now, there's another 21. Not that that's something I want to have linked to, but, you know, and then just finding out months beforehand that there's real astrological evidence that Jesus Christ was born on September 11. I mean, that's just, these kind of things are amazing. The money that we received right before the week, you know, and then something that physically happened with Lisa that we were like, that's a sign. And she absolutely believed it. We had all these signs. And I say, see, God was leading us to believe for this. And then it all comes into nothing. It's a total contradiction, exactly like what Austin Sparks says. He has this writing where he says, in fact, I'm just going to find it. So he writes, there are times when we are so sure that the Lord has led us in a certain way to take a certain course, to do a certain thing, or to a certain purpose. It comes to us with much life and assurance. And I will say this 9/11, believing for that, came to us with much life and assurance. At the time, there seems to be real corroboration that it is of the Lord. Even our Hanamels turn up on time. We make our committal, set ourselves to the call or demand, and faith is all eager. Man, was our faith eager. Then we are invaded by the adverse forces, like the prison in which we are found, which is where I'm at right now, or like the armies of the Chaldeans besieging. The temptation is to wonder if we have been mistaken, misled, and a trick has been played on us. A battle in the dark ensues, and the whole question of the faithfulness of God is raised. That is exactly the situation that we find ourselves in. The whole question of the faithfulness of God is raised, except for the fact that I have a tendency to lean more on now, oh, I must have misheard. I must have, again, like, did I mishear wrong? I'm not questioning God's faithfulness. It's almost like I don't have the capacity to even do that really anymore, I don't think. I still believe he's faithful. And why am I not mad at God right now? This is another thing that's very remarkable about this time. I'll say more about that in a minute. But he says, how true to history is it that the Lord's people and his servants in particular can never take a position with him without sooner or later being tested severely by that position? I think of what happened with P. I think of now what has happened with me and Lisa. I'm being tested severely. Lisa is being tested severely. We've taken a position of faith. We've sent the house. We've sent the possessions. We've sent the bags, all my personal belongings. We've changed the name. We've, you know, bought rings. We've done everything. I send all my money there. I mean, we have flat done all of this. Perhaps the very reactions and assaults of doubt are only allowed in order to test the quality of faith. So apparently God looks for a faith that goes far beyond just believing up to the deliverance, which could be hard enough. But it seems that at this stage in my life, God is looking for a faith that goes beyond what appears to have been a defeat of the faith. It's the only thing I can think of, because We right now are in a situation where we believed 100% that the providence of God was showing us something absolutely dramatic was going to happen, had to happen. There was no way. I still can't believe it didn't happen. 21 dates pointing to 9/11. You're not going to tell me that's a coincidence. And after all that God has done in my life in dates and times, it's a sure sign. But now here it is. 9/20. And 9:16, as I say that, 9:16 a.m., I raised you up for this purpose, to show you my power and make my name known amongst the nations. It's a bit like God does this miracle to get you out of Egypt, but then puts you in a situation where you're at the Red Sea and everything has failed. You have mountains on each side of you, an ocean in front of you. You are trapped. There's no way out except by God. And that's a bit what it feels like. Like, God, why would you lead us to this 9/11 and then have it be a sea that never parted? It seems a bit like that. And I'm still convinced that God is going to do something. God is going to do something. He is going to deliver us. If he hasn't already, I still feel like we just haven't received it yet. Like something has been mailed, something has been said, something has been done, some decision has been made, some law has been changed. I don't know, but something has had to have happened. So how true about them being tested severely by that very position? A dungeon and an enemy host are sufficient to test the reality of the vision. He's talking about Babylonian siege against Jerusalem. This is coming out of the story of Jeremiah being told to buy the land. Jeremiah had an overwhelming amount of the impossible, the quote, too hard in his seen situation. It would have been so easy at any time to surrender to existing conditions. Every servant of God who has been given the heavenly vision, like right now, we could just surrender to existing conditions and say, but I just can't. I believe I have a word from God. And even though the time that I believed that it was going to come to pass has come and gone, I still have this faith that something has happened. I just don't have any feelings. It's like the feelings and the hope of it have died. I don't know how to explain it, but there's still a hope there. Every servant of God who has been given the heavenly vision and been made acquainted with God's eternal purpose has, after a thoroughgoing committal and some encouraging corroborations, come to the time of severe testing by circumstances which raise ultimate questions. The conditions are you that it is a vain hope. Life will pass in disappointment. How much more precise could that describe exactly how we're feeling? Exactly what the situation is for us. The conditions of the child support and no having a passport are shouting at us. And God, you can see how I told Lisa, I said, notice how the Lord has brought all of our natural help and all of our natural circumstances into absolutely nothingness. All of our hopes were dashed. The brother that we felt and hoped would be used to help get me there, and we pray specifically for any of his friends that he feels can get me there, the second leg, if you will, God, have them mention Australia or New Zealand, and that'll be the clue that we're to step into that. We have this happen basically 4 times. 2 of them were really significant, and except for the door didn't quite all the way open up. And then you see how the one friend was going to look at buying these 3 Air New Zealand planes. We couldn't believe it. We're like, you got to be kidding me. That comes to nothing. That door closes. Then another friend of his says, oh man, I'm going to buy this sailboat. I've put an offer on it. It's off the coast of Australia and I'm going to have to winter it in New Zealand and it has to be sold and gone by September. I've put an offer in on it. We're like, you got to be kidding me. What are the chances of this? It comes to nothing. You see, this is not coincidence. These are not coincidences. I'd ask anybody who foolishly would believe that those are coincidences that we pray, Lord, have one of his friends contact him, not him contacting them, and somehow or another mention something about going to New Zealand. And he has 2 people that have this happen, one with a plane, one with a boat. Are you kidding me? and they both come to nothing. Then we get the notification from his company that the jump seats on the planes international are no longer allowed until further notice because of COVID, additional COVID restrictions. That's another pouring water on the sacrifice. And then there was the fact that that same friend one day hearing one of my recordings, then he offered $20,000 to, you know, pay off that child support amount. And the Lord tells me, no, he shuts that down. Then Carol Ann says she's going to give us all this money that the Lord says to her, this is my money, meaning mine, Michael Criswell's money. And she goes and attempts to try to start transferring some of it to me. And the bank completely shuts her down. Everything, it looks like, has been turned. The adverse forces, exactly as he says, the adverse forces come against it. These adverse forces start coming against it and attack everything. We then are invaded by the adverse forces, like the prison in which we are found, or like the armies of the Chaldeans besieging. The temptation is to wonder if we've been mistaken. How could you possibly imagine everything is so textbook? It's so precise to what God has done with us here. Jeremiah had an overwhelming amount of impossible, the too hard, as seen in this situation. So here it is. The Lord tells me not to pay off the child support well in advance of all this happening. You see how the Lord blocked us in. We have mountains on our left, mountains on our right, and then we have a wide open ocean, literally an ocean between us, 8,000 miles of ocean between us that's uncrossable, impassable, because every door has been closed. I have to believe that God has, when I look at all these things that God opened up and closed, and it's like God has gone out of his way, exactly like with the Shunammite woman. He went out of his way to help people to know and to help her know that that child that she had was not through natural means. Even though she was old and her husband was old and she has the child, he writes, you know, people could still believe that there was some natural psychological explanation for this. So what does God do? He kills the son. He brings it all into total death, and then he raises him up. And as Spark says, psychology cannot raise the dead. It can create all kinds of well-intended meaning out of all the things that are beyond the meaning of most people. But psychology puts its definition on that. But you look at this situation, it's like, I think God is doing the same thing, because he says that God is jealous for a testimony of resurrection, that the ultimate testimony, the ultimate proof of Christ is where death has come in and resurrection takes place. So as of right now, I would say we are fully standing in death, fully standing in death. There is, everything is impossible about this. I am not going to end up in New Zealand by walking on this trail, making recordings about how I'm not doing anything to get myself to New Zealand unless I have heard from God, right? And he is doing these perplexing things, and he's just drawing it out, bringing it so that there's no question at all that this did not and could not happen by any natural means whatsoever. It seems to me that this is exactly what God is doing. He's really showing that I not only brought this all into death last year with sending Michael to the airport, I've got proof. I mean, God is putting proof all over this thing that there is no way for me naturally to get to New Zealand. He had me try. I went to the airport with a plane ticket, without a passport and without a visa, just to obey God. It came into nothing. It shows I cannot do this naturally. And now, you know, I see how God has closed in the child support thing, and I'm still stuck here because of the child support thing. It is absolutely amazing to see this. I'm still being held back because I obeyed God to not pay off the child support. It literally, every single door is closed. Every single door is closed. Wow, just wow. So I'm going to keep going on here. Jeremiah had an overwhelming amount of the impossible, the too hard, in his seen situation. It would have been so easy at any time to surrender to existing conditions. Every servant of God who has been given this heavenly vision has been acquainted with God's eternal purpose, has, after a thorough committal and some encouraging corroborations, come to a severe time of testing. where the circumstances raise ultimate questions. The conditions argue that it is a vain hope, life will pass, and disappointment. Then he has done it, God. And you know there are times when we are very sure that the Lord means a thing to be done, which is now. I know God means for me to be with my wife, Lisa, in New Zealand. He has given us tokens, perhaps evidences, spoken to us in our own hearts, then confirmed it in different ways, and we know. And at the time, we act accordingly. And we do it as far as we can, very thoroughly. And when it is done, we get a reaction. It's like Jeremiah says, okay, the armies are besieging us. You've said this is going to last for 70 years, and now you're telling me to buy the field? And I could say, okay, I have no visa, I have no passport, and now you're telling me to go to the airport? And I did. Seems like 3 years ago, I remember when I was thinking about immigrating into New Zealand, that I think I remember that there was like maybe a 49-year old age constraint, that after 49, you can't immigrate to New Zealand. I remember seeing something like that. And if that's the case, then look at what we have here. I'm now 49 years old. This would be another constraint and an impossibility if I saw that correctly from all those years ago. And that's just popped into my mind right now. That would be another impossibility. And yet you're telling, and God's held me back. And if supposing I would have been aware of that, imagine the pressure if I went online and saw that, you know, after 49 years of age, you can't emigrate to New Zealand. Or if you do, it's very difficult. So here it is. I may even be past the age, you know, of something. So if I would have seen that, I would have been even probably more like, oh my goodness. But there again, with God, all things are possible. It seems to me that God is going way out of his way to show that there is no natural way I can or will ever have gotten to New Zealand apart from him. And I hope and pray that to the degree of the perplexity, to the degree of the suffering that it's required for me to go through all this with Lisa and to watch all this providence and the days come and go and all the having to tell it publicly, how I pray that to the degree of the shame and disgrace and question marks will be to the degree of the lifting up, the exaltation and the power of God's hand shown in this. I really do pray that's the case. Then he has done it. And you know, there are times when we are very sure the Lord means a thing to be done. He's given us tokens, perhaps evidences, spoken us to our own hearts, then confirmed in different ways. And we know, and at that time, we act accordingly. We do it as far as we can, very thoroughly. And when it is done, we get a reaction. The whole meaning of the situation, of what we have done, comes back upon us. And we are almost frightened at what we have done. I would say that there have been times when I think about, my goodness, I've sent everything. Like this morning, I had this thought. I don't even have a winter jacket. It's the seasons are changing, and I don't even have a winter jacket. I sent all my jackets over to, you know, New Zealand. Granted, it's not hard to come by a jacket, but my thoughts are, I've sent everything I own over there. My house, I mean, huge risk. I don't have any place to live. You know, aside of staying with Tyler, I've sent my house, my hope, my heart, my money, everything is over there. It's a huge risk. The whole meaning of the situation of what we have done comes back upon us, and we are almost frightened at what we have done. The path that we have taken, that is what happened to Jeremiah. He did it thoroughly in full assurance, and when it was all done and the people had gone and he was left alone with the Lord in the imprisonment, he had a terrible reaction. It all came back upon him. He was now being tested by the position that he had taken. He turns to prayer, makes an affirmation, quote, there is nothing too hard for thee, O God. And then goes on to build up a case, perhaps to undergird his own faith. He takes the history of Israel and the wonderful things the Lord has done, comes right on to his own ministry, and sees how even it is being fulfilled. I'm saying I've done the exact same thing. What he has been saying all these years, the Lord is doing. See, this is exactly what I'm doing. I'm reminding Lisa of all these things that he's done. Look at this. He did this. He did this. He did this. The 1,335 days, 777 days. He got me through here, the trusting God in the storm. He did all this. I'm going back over my whole history to keep my faith strong, remembering what God has done. The Chaldeans are there. He goes over it all, but it is all an interrogation. He has made a statement, but it is all an interrogation of the Lord. He winds it all up then, quote, "Thou hast said unto me, O Lord Jehovah, buy thee the field for money and call witnesses, even though the city is given into the hand of the Chaldeans." It has come back upon him now at last. Then the Lord comes in and challenges him as to the very thing that he said, "Is anything too hard for me? You have said that nothing is too hard for me. Is anything too hard for me?" The Lord brings him back to his own position. And so I would say that the Lord maybe would be asking me the same thing now. But I'm not in the same place as Jeremiah, I don't believe. I don't believe I'm saying, "Lord, you told me to do all this and it hasn't happened." I think I'm already past that. I think I have already had those experiences. Now I'm so exhausted and so surrendered to the Lord's will that I'm just like, "Okay, Lord, if you don't want to do anything on 9/11, that's fine." I have never felt that way. That's also how I know this stage of the journey has been very spiritually fertile, productive, because Lisa and I experienced such a high of grace on 9/11 by the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ. For the first time, we were not disappointed. We felt such joy. We felt ourselves saying, "Gosh, if the Lord let us feel like this, we could live for 5 years without each other easily. It's no problem. Lord, your will be done." And then a few days later, that grace started to cool off and we came back to normalcy, but yet not into despair, not into unbelief. We still believe. We've just cooled off and holding the dates so tightly. And I've said, "Lord, if you want to let these dates come and go, this is your testimony. You do as you see fit." He's not obligated to bring himself glory through my life. He's not obligated to fulfill what he showed me. He can do whatever he wants. The Lord has compassion on whom he has compassion. He has mercy on whom he has mercy. And I love that I'm feeling that in my heart. I said, "Wow, sweetheart, this is something new for us. We, neither one of us, really got very disappointed about this. We're very perplexed, very surprised, but we're not groaning and grumbling and reaching out. So to me, it looks like faith has had its perfect work. You are mature and complete, lacking nothing." We're at this point where we're like, "Okay, Lord, you know, I mean, I literally feel like I'm holding everything so loosely. Like if he wanted to say, 'Okay, this was all a big joke, unwind it, pick the tiny house back up, send it back to America,' whatever. I mean, if God wanted to do whatever, I'd be willing to do it." I'm at that place, honestly, where I wouldn't be surprised anymore about anything. I wouldn't be surprised at this point if Lisa and I, either one of us, you know, just drop dead of a heart attack suddenly and just be like, "Okay, Lord, I guess all this ends up making sense when we get to heaven. But right now I can't make sense of it all." That's something deep. That's something where you've gotten all of you out of the way and you're just like, "Okay, Lord, whatever you say, Father," without saying, "Yeah, Lord, whatever you want to do, just do it. I'm out." That's a totally contemptuous, bad attitude. This is, "Okay, Lord, I don't get it. That's how I feel in my heart, but I'm okay. I just trust you, Lord. I did what I felt I was supposed to do. I have tracked the providence. I've tried to listen to you and believe you, and I was wrong. And so, Lord, I accept it. I'm wrong." And that's where I feel I'm at. And I've been here since 9/11. Unable to be pushed by the grace of God into defeat or despair or unbelief. In fact, at a higher level, Lord, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And just feeling neutral about the whole thing. Over the Lord's work and the Lord's testimony. That kind of situation very often arises in the matter of a calling in relation to the Lord's purpose. Such a situation will arise more than once in life. It has for me. He does allow positions like this to arise where naturally there is no hope, no ground of assurance. Everything is threatening and says it cannot be. That is exactly the position that we are in right now. Exactly in the position that we're in right now. There is no natural hope. God has killed off all natural ways of this happening. But over that, at some time, we had a transaction with the Lord. We felt that the Lord led in that direction. And that was the Lord's will. my transaction was I sent the tiny house in my bags and Lisa changed her name. After much prayer, we had no doubt about it at the time. After much prayer, that was the way the Lord led. And now everything says that it is a mistake. It is foolishness. It is foolhardy. It is altogether impossible. Altogether beyond you. Everything says that. And we are challenged as to the position we took with the Lord. And in the midst of those conditions, the Lord calls for a ratification contract in a very definite way in faith of the position taken with him. I'm not sure what else the Lord would have me do beyond what I've already done by sending over the tiny house and doing all these things. I feel like I've already done this. So I'm not really sure the stage I'm at. But Jeremiah just lately had been striking another note in his preaching. There was a note of a distant hope. Whereas up to now, it had all been gloom, judgment, and destruction. There had arisen on Jeremiah's prophetic horizon a ray of light, a distant hope, and a note of hope had come into his preaching. The Lord would turn again the captivity of Zion. At that point, Hanamel came. This meant two things with Jeremiah. Firstly, the challenge to the new note of hope. Quote, Jeremiah, do you believe what you are saying? In other words, Jeremiah is saying that there will be redemption, restoration, freedom again from the bondage. And then so he comes and says, buy the field. So it's a challenge. Jeremiah, do you believe what you are saying? In other words, if I think that God's going to bless me and get me to New Zealand, God could come to me and say, send the tiny house over. But Lord, I don't have a passport. I don't have a visa. And then to make matters even worse, after the tiny house gets there, God tells me to stop paying the child support. He makes it even more difficult. So he says, firstly, the challenge to the new note of hope. Jeremiah, do you believe what you were saying? In light of those circumstances, in light of all that you know is yet to take place, 70 years of captivity, do you believe what you are saying? Do you believe that hope? Do you believe that light beyond? Do you believe that? Although today and for a time, the realization of your vision is utterly impossible, that it will still be realized. Do you believe it? And I think God would be asking us this exact question today. Although right now, temporarily, it is absolutely 100% impossible. Every option has opened and closed. Every date has come and gone. We have nothing else. It shows that the whole thing is totally collapsed into death. Do you believe it? God would say. But as a testimony to that, in this dark and terrible day, Jeremiah took this practical step by which he set up a monument to the faithfulness of God. God is jealous for his own name, his own faithfulness, his own testimony. He is looking for those who in utter selflessness and hopeless natural conditions will be true to the revelation that he has given, true to God and what he has made known of himself. There is nothing too hard for thee. We say that, and then it all comes back upon us because of the situation. And the Lord has to come back on our own words and say, is anything too hard for me? The Lord has put it into our hearts, something which we had no doubt about as being his mind, his way for us. There was much prayer, and we had assurance in our hearts that that was the Lord's way for us in life. It has been tested. We have gone through a lot with it. And then a situation arises which seems to bring it all into the realm of impossibility of realization. Circumstances are all against it. And the temptation is to question our original leading, to doubt the Lord about our lives, and to just sink down and accept the situation as an impossible one. It is at such times that the Lord looks to us to give a position, token of our faith in him, and to commit ourselves in some way in faith. We are involved by our faith in an act. Self is ruled out and all self-interests are entirely set aside. And it is the Lord's interest and the Lord's glory we have in view, and we get through. The Lord comes back, and while he challenges our original position with, quote, is anything too hard for me? He goes on, as firm as the ordinances of the heaven and my covenant of day and night, as firm as that is my faithfulness to you, with you, as sure as that will I be committed to the realization of what I have revealed, and I will say to you. So I find it quite remarkable to read something like this that was written many years before I was born, that speaks so precisely to my exact spiritual experience and the ground upon which I walk now. And I'm just going to rest in it that the Lord has given me this faith. I believe the great evidence that the Lord is going to do this is because I still have faith. Even though I don't feel faith-ish, I still have faith. Even though I don't have any energy to do much of anything right now, I still know and believe I am going to be in New Zealand with my wife. Our day is coming. And I think that faith, if I see correctly, God will say, now you have the highest level of faith you can have. When you have seen my hand say to you, clearly on this day something will happen, and then I choose to let it come and go and nothing happens. And instead of going into despair or questioning my faithfulness or sinking down into thinking you were wrong, you look at all that I've done in the past, and my past faithfulness outweighs your ability to sink into any kind of unbelief today. And you still believe me, even though you have no reason to by the senses. That is the faith that is most pleasing to him. I think also this will be a picture of the frustrations that a lot of end time believers will have to go through when they're really hoping that Jesus is going to come. They're really hoping there's going to be life on the other side of their death. And the circumstances all around them just ever increasingly contradict the promises, the faith, the statements, and the belief system of the Bible. The worldview of the Bible just gets contradicted more and more. And you still have to decide, do you believe what God said, that there will be a lifting up, there will be a resurrection, there will be a trumpet and the dead will rise, there will be a separating of the goats and the sheep, there will be eternal life and a kingdom given, prepared in advance before all creation for us. So I'm going to leave it at that and finish up a few minutes in prayer. I'm feeling very tired and out of it, and I'm going to just continue to trust in the Lord God Most High and see Him do the impossible. I'm so thankful that I have faith today. I'm so, so thankful that I still believe. I'm amazed. To me, that's a miracle that everything can turn against me, every circumstance, every bout of time, the biggest providence we've ever seen. And here I am still recording faith, still believing that my God is going to come through for me. There's a reason for this. And God will be glorified when He answers our prayers, when He finally says, enough is enough. You've passed the test. You've demonstrated real faith that goes far beyond your ability to endure, such that you despaired even of life. This happened that you might not rest on yourself, but on God, me, who raises the dead. And that's what we're doing. We're trusting in Him. Praise His holy name. Thank you.